But if you close your eyes.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. You're listening to This Week Again. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. And happy Mother's Day to everyone with a vagina. Because whether you've had a kid or not, if Republicans have their way, you'll be forced to eventually. We're going to start off this show with TikTok finally suing the U.S. government over the ban. Move on to what Biden's doing about Netanyahu's current invasion on Rafah that allegedly hasn't even started yet. And follow all of that up with the latest in You're Never Going to Believe This Shit 2024 Presidential Election Edition. Let's begin, shall we? It's been 2 weeks since President Biden signed the TikTok ban into existence. And that means TikTok has the better part of a year to divest from its parent company, ByteDance, or lose 3% of its user base. Because in the alternate reality of free market capitalism, American-owned tech companies are easier for the U.S. government to control, except when they sell user data directly to the Chinese government, or just sell Americans' privacy to third-party data brokers who then sell it to the Chinese government. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Meta, Google, and the embarrassment formerly known as Twitter. So I guess it came as no surprise. TikTok has responded to the U.S. government's censorship of free speech like this.
And TikTok is suing the U.S. government over a new law that could ban the app nationwide. The social media company claims the law is unconstitutional and violates Americans' rights to free speech.
They're arguing this law requiring they be divested or sold by their China-based owner within a year is a breach of the First Amendment and an unlawful singling out of their company in the world of many, many social media platforms. And they say in this challenge, there's no question this will force a shutdown January 19th, 2025, silencing 170 million Americans in the process.
Arguing in its legal filing, for the first time in history, Congress has enacted a law that subjects a single named speech platform to a permanent nationwide ban. The company also says that it's not possible legally, technically, or commercially to divest within that time frame.
Well, duh. Divestment is a several years long process, not to mention the majority of stakeholders in TikTok are not the Chinese government, but rather people from all over the world, including American citizens. But who cares about who is actually invested in TikTok when you've got a national security issue is the bullshit excuse Congress and the president are now giving to violate our First Amendment right to free speech. And why wouldn't they? Well, there is a myriad of reasons, but the most obvious is the banning of TikTok has nothing to do with national security and everything to do with controlling a specific narrative regarding a specific nation state that's gone full genocide right before our very eyes and on TikTok. Or as U.S. Senator and 77-year-old man who says the quiet part out loud pointed out during a recent interview with Secretary of State Anthony Blinken at the McCain Institute. Roll tape.
Why has the PR been so awful? Why has Hamas disappeared in terms of public perception? The world is screaming about Israel. It's like, why aren't they screaming about Hamas? Typically, the Israelis are good at PR. What's happened here? How have they and we been so ineffective at communicating the realities there and our point of view? Some wonder why there was such overwhelming support for us to shut down potentially TikTok. If you look at the postings on TikTok and the number of mentions of Palestinians relative to other social media sites, it's overwhelmingly so among TikTok broadcasts. So I'd note that's of real interest, and the president will get the chance to make action in that regard.
Oh, and just like that, we know for a fact that all of this protecting Americans' data for the sake of national security is just some old bullshit. Both sides of the aisle banding together to lie to the American public because the Israelis have a PR problem. What with Palestinians posting videos showing Netanyahu's extermination campaign without being filtered through the mainstream media first, or the White House press secretary. And I agree with Mitt, that would be a problem if the goal is to get American support for genocide by the kids and the grandkids of genocide survivors for the purpose of replacing the Gaza Strip with some oceanfront property and a port of commerce. But when I put it like that, this whiny little bitch comment from Biden-appointed Secretary of State Anthony Blinken starts to make a whole lot of fucking sense.
In my time in Washington, which is a little bit over 30 years, the single biggest change has been in the information environment. When I started out in the early 1990s, everyone did the same thing. You woke up in the morning, you opened the door of your apartment, your house, you picked up a hard copy of the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal. And then if you had a television in your office, you turned it on at 6:30 or 7 o'clock and watched the national network news. Now, of course, we are on an intravenous feed of information. And of course, the way this has played out on social media has dominated the narrative. And you have a social media ecosystem environment, and the emotion, the impact of images dominates. We can't discount that, but I think it also has a very, very, very challenging effect on the narrative.
What in the apathetic bullshit is this employment mistake talking about? So it's a problem for the U.S. government when Americans are emotionally motivated to stand up for a group of people whose only crime is living on a piece of land for thousands of years before Britain decided to colonize it after World War I. Or is it the fact that the Israeli government's conflation of every single Palestinian with the terrorist group Hamas isn't working as well as it did just a decade ago? Because TikTok is creating well-informed populations who aren't buying the official narrative from their government. Well, according to Mitt and Blinken, it's the latter, folks. And good for TikTok's lawsuit, but bad for the U.S. government, which is probably why the Biden administration just did this after TikTok announced legal action.
Three U.S. officials now telling ABC News that the U.S. is actually going to pause deliveries of ammunition to Israel.
It has to do with how the munitions is used. But the question is, essentially, the large diameter bombs, the 2,000-pound JDAMs, those are the specific weapons that we are hearing are being paused because they cause so much destruction when used in urban areas, generally something we would not do. I think that is where the issue lies, and the ground penetrating munitions, which are effective on tunnels, but can cause significant destruction to the buildings around where the point of impact is.
So let me get this straight. It's only certain weapons that Biden is putting a pause on sending to the Israeli prime disaster. You know, that kind of sounds like when you take your kid's phone, but not their internet access as a form of punishment, you know, because of an invasion, which is certainly not an invasion of Rafah that Israel happened to start earlier this week. And if you are confused by that word salad, I mean dropping bombs all over Rafah, destroying tent encampments, killing 35 and injuring 129 Palestinians that we know of so far. Apparently, isn't an actual invasion of Rafah. See, an invasion happens when the IDF's genocidal soldiers have their boots on the ground. So bombing Palestinians from the sky who happen to be in Rafah because Israel told them to go there and now they have nowhere else to go is okay. But if soldiers were actually in the streets, that's a bridge too far for Biden. And get the fuck out of here with that crap. Oh, and for those of you in the back, Hamas already signed the ceasefire agreement that Bibi wrote up, but bitchface Yahoo has more killing to do. So he said, fuck Hamas and the deal they signed. Not invading Rafah. So they're dropping bombs from the sky in civilian populations because that's all thanks to the IDF bombing Palestinians all the way across the Gaza Strip and now ending up at the edge of Egypt with a wall separating them. And oh, don't forget about the coastline because the IDF hasn't either. They're dropping bombs on families out there too because who has time to enjoy a day at the beach when not enough Palestinians who aren't playing dead in the sand are, you know, actually dead. Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department quietly released a report they did on Israel circa October 7th, 2023, and you'll never guess what it says. Roll tape.
A new Biden administration report suggests Israeli forces may have violated international humanitarian law using U.S. weapons. But the report also says that it is inconclusive.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken submitted a report to Congress about Israel's conduct in Gaza late Friday. The findings stop short of concluding that Israel has violated the terms of a U.S. weapons agreement.
The Biden administration does not have complete information to verify that Israel used U.S. arms to violate international law, but it is, quote, reasonable to assess that it has. The report also notes that Israel did not cooperate with U.S. efforts to ramp up humanitarian aid and distribution in Gaza during the initial months of the conflict.
This is not a clean bill of health for Israel, but the basic point is that Israel is a professional military and a learning organization, and the State Department is saying that they've seen the Israel Defense Forces take corrective action and launch credible investigations.
And I gotta say, we are so lucky to have this report from the Secretary of State himself, Antony Blinken. You know, the guy you heard from earlier in the show talking to Spill the Beans about TikTok Romney, going on about the U.S. government and the media can't control the BB-approved narrative about what is going on in Gaza thanks to the meddling social app. So, in other words, the primary sources of images, video, and reporting from Palestinians in Gaza getting bombed, getting shot on camera, that's what's fucking up their narrative. Fucking Blinken writes a 46-page short story about how Israel has violated humanitarian law, but not enough of the humanitarian law to actually break humanitarian laws. And if that circular reasoning doesn't make you dizzy, I don't know what will, because I literally had to pause reading after about the third page just to take a shot of Dramamine. Because on page whatever the fuck ever, Blinken admits his report is inconclusive because Prime Minister Disappointment of Israel has been, I don't know, hiding shit with their documentation of the super obvious genocide going on in Gaza. And therefore, he can't really say whether or not this guy is guilty of any war crimes. Which is why I don't know for a fact that this two-faced report was made to justify the total extincting of Palestinians in Gaza while giving a bone to the kids who are getting their asses kicked by the police for demanding a ceasefire on the Strip. I just know it's true. And if that weren't enough, the smallest excuse for a Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, is mighty pissed off that Biden is not supplying Israel with every single genocide-ensuring bomb that the Pentagon has.
And with regard to Israel, and I'll take questions, we just when we thought it was only university presidents who were caving into the absurd demands of the pro-Hamas students, the president himself has now reportedly halted ammunition shipments to Israel. President Biden is clearly trying to placate the pro-Hamas element of his party. There's no other explanation for that. And if I remember correctly, and I do because I was here, House Democrats engaged in a sham impeachment of President Trump over questions about politicizing military aid. This is not the will of Congress. This is an underhanded attempt to withhold aid without facing accountability. It's undermining what Congress intended and has acted to take care of by authorizing aid to Israel. And so, if the president truly wanted to defeat Hamas, like he said in the past, he wouldn't be standing in the way, preventing it from happening. I think that's clear. We're going to try to get down to the bottom of that as well.
Oh, I bet you will. Republican Jesus freaks received their talking points papers and immediately went on right-wing outlets to cry about Hamas Joe and his plans to destroy the ethno-state of Israel.
And now what the Biden administration has done is they become the primary protector of Hamas.
He absolutely is siding with the terrorists.
The only reason they're not dancing in Iran is because they don't believe in dancing.
Joe Biden has been the greatest friend to Hamas and Hezbollah that there is on planet Earth.
Amen.
And I don't know about you, but using the word Hamas in place of all Palestinians is getting a little old. Because while we all know the only party to have a Jewish space laser expert as a prominent member doesn't give two shits about Israel other than its importance in their Bronze Age mythology. And while Tiny Johnson is acting like Biden halting one shipment of bombs is the same as the orange turd refusing Ukraine aid because they wouldn't validate his lies about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, because it's not. But then again, we have yet another opportunity for the Republicans to impeach, or at least try to impeach, the current president. Of course, for halting one shipment of bombs when ammunition and other bombs are still being shipped, which is probably why 12 Republicans felt now would be a really good time to threaten the International Criminal Court prosecutor considering issuing arrest warrants for Netanyahu and his genocidal generals.
This scoop came courtesy of Zateo, that's Mehdi Hassan's news outlet. He got a hold of a letter that was sent from a number of high-profile Republican senators, including Mitch McConnell, that directly threatened the ICC prosecutor and threatened their family members. They say in a terse one-page letter obtained exclusively by Zateo and signed by 12 GOP senators, including Tom Cotton, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Khan, that's a prosecutor, is informed that any attempt by the ICC to hold Netanyahu and his colleagues to account for their actions in Gaza will be interpreted not only as a threat to Israel's sovereignty, but to the sovereignty of the United States. Quote, target Israel and we will target you, adding they will sanction your employees and associates and ban you and your families from the United States. The letter concludes, quote, you have been warned.
Oh, really? Now, fitting it is that this shell game, supported by such fine people like Turtle McConnell from Kentucky, Tom Pick My Daddy's Cotton from Arkansas, Midlife Crisis Cruz from Texas, Katie Live from Her Kitchen Brit from Alabama, Slender Man Scott and Little Marco Rubio from Florida, just to name a few. 12 of these Mayo supremacists signed their names to the ICC threat that says Americans have this thing called the American Service Member Protection Act of 2002, which, according to these assholes, gives them the power to seek revenge on the ICC if it tries to arrest an American citizen, especially elected ones, who happen to be accessories to Bibi's final solution in Gaza. And why wouldn't they, when Blinken just submitted a report saying that they don't know if Israel committed crimes against humanity or violated international law, because they didn't tell them that they did. So how are they supposed to know? Because that makes all the sense, said no one ever.
And now for something completely different.
Choosing a candidate for president in 2024 isn't easy. There are so many things to consider, like, is the candidate too old to run the country, or are they currently indicted on 91 criminal charges awaiting trial? But I didn't have, is part of their brain missing because there's a dead worm in their cranium on my presidential candidate profile card?
There was an eye-opening headline tonight involving presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The New York Times reporting on a 2012 deposition during which RFK Jr. said doctors once found a parasite, a dead worm, in his brain.
According to the New York Times, Kennedy testified in a 2012 deposition that he experienced memory loss at the time, saying, I have cognitive problems, clearly. Kennedy said one of the doctors said it could have been caused by a worm that got into my brain and ate a portion of it and then died.
Kennedy says the tapeworm apparently came from undercooked pork he ate during a trip to Asia. He says it was discovered during a brain scan. There was an abnormality that was caused by a worm that got into my brain.
The larvae from the pork gets into the bloodstream and then can travel all over the body. Yes, including the brain.
Kennedy's spokesperson said he now is in good health, and a candidate wrote on X that he'd offer to eat 5 more brain worms and still beat President Trump and President Biden in a debate.
Yeah, and you know what? That sounds like someone who's missing part of their brain because a worm ate it would say. Because it sounds stupid as fuck. And not for nothing, but the 2012 deposition where RFK Jr. revealed that he lost a portion of his mind, literally, was over alimony payments. This douche tried to use the old,
have you the brain worms?
excuse in court to get out of alimony payments because his brain, you know, doesn't work so good. And that means he can't make so much money. What the fuck to anyone who is still supporting this asshole? This schmuck is only about 2/3 of his brain left. And that, of course, includes the presidential part, if you ask his campaign spokesperson, is legit running to be the 47th president of the United States. And why the fuck not, when Magallardo just hosted a Veep pageant at his retirement home in Florida in search of the next, not Mike Pence. Roll tape.
Covering Veep stakes. And a lot of movement on that front over the weekend. He had this forum at Mar-a-Lago.
We're learning new details after several potential picks joined him at a Mar-a-Lago weekend donor retreat.
He still has a litany of names. There were two individuals who he welcomed up on stage and made direct references to being potential VP picks. That was Elise Stefanik, Congresswoman of New York, as well as Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Mr. Trump praising Senators Marco Rubio, Tim Scott, and J.D. Vance from the stage, as well as Representatives Elise Stefanik and Byron Donalds, and North Dakota's Governor Doug Burgum. Also getting a shout-out, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem.
About Senator Tim Scott, he said, as a surrogate, he's unbelievable. On Congressman Michael Waltz, a man that knows more about the military. When I want to know about the military, I call him. Kristi Noem, somebody that I love. Senator Mike Lee, I love your haircut, and he's a good man, too. Representative Hunt, makes the best commercials. Congressman Byron Donalds, I like diversity. Diversité, as you would say. I like diversité.
And that is why Von Krapsenpampers was selling those fake gold-plated air treasons a few months ago, you know, for $400. Because he likes diversité when it comes to enticing black voters with footwear, but when it comes to his dictator for a day sidekick, he's looking for a specific type of ass kisser. And it sounds like senatorial disaster from South Dakota and token for Drumpf, Mr. Tim Scott, has the right lips for the job.
Senator, will you commit to accepting the election results of 2024? Bottom line.
Well, at the end of the day, the 47th president of the United States will be President Donald Trump.
Yes or no, will you accept the election results of 2024 no matter who wins?
That is my statement.
Just yes or no, will you accept the election results of 2024?
I look forward to President Trump being the 47th president. At the end of the day, I've said what I've said, and I believe that President Trump will be our next president.
The hallmark of our democracy is that both candidates agree to a peaceful transfer of power. So I'm asking you, as a potential VP nominee, will you accept to commit to the election results in this election cycle, no matter who wins?
I expect President Trump to win the next election. Listen, I'm not going to answer your hypothetical question when, in fact, I believe the American people are speaking today on the results of the election. And if it continues for the next 6 months, we find ourselves in a great position where we get back to another century of American prosperity.
And in preserving my future argument of election fraud news, you just heard Kristen Welker, host of NBC's Meet the Press, futilely asked Timmy from Old Dixie, Dakota, not once, not twice, but 6 times, if he's going to accept the results of the 2024 election. And all 6 times, Simping Scotty said he looks forward to Rumpelthinskin's return to the White House. Like it's an inevitability. Or maybe there's something about the outcome of the election that only the truest of Nodfather groupies, like the electoral mistake New Yorkers wish they could take back, Miss Elise Stefanik, who said the quiet part out loud on national television.
Had you been vice president on January 6, 2021, what would you have done?
I would not have done what Mike Pence did. I don't think that was the right approach.
It's notable to hear you say, given you're in the running to be the vice president, that you would have rejected those votes. Come this election, when Vice President Harris is in that position, would you be okay if she rejected the votes if Donald Trump wins?
When it comes to this election, we are seeing the Democrats trying to remove President Trump from the ballot. That is not constitutional. That is not a legal and safe, secure election.
All right, calm down. Okay, I get why you'd have a problem with Republicans in Colorado having standards, Karen, but not everyone thinks the leader of an insurrection should be given the chance to get his old job back. What's boggling my mind is how you can act like deleting your statement right after January 6th, where you said the Trumplicans' violent attack on the Capitol was, quote, absolutely unacceptable and anti-American, finishing off with my favorite line, quote, the perpetrators of this un-American violence and destruction must be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. In other words, if you were Mike Pence back in 2020, you would be making these current statements from a jail cell. But hey, at least you wouldn't be hanging from a gallows, am I right? And that's all I have to say about that. New episodes of This Week Again air every Sunday. And don't forget, Sundays at 6 p.m. Ohio time, you can re-listen to this very show on Crowtown Radio. You can follow This Week Again on social media wherever you can find us. And we're always available for your listening pleasure. Places like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, Amazon Music, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to this show. And to Dur for now.